Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. That celebration of Cleveland used to be the opening of the Drew Carey Show, and it is a perfect setup for our topic this hour, Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati, Ohio's three C's. 10 years ago, the Dispatch reported that our largest cities were enjoying downtown booms, adding residents, jobs, and vibrancy. But in the decades since, Columbus seems to have pulled ahead of the pack, winning mega projects like Intel and becoming the fastest growing metropolitan area in the Midwest. But Columbus's news hasn't all been positive. Home prices are soaring, farmland is disappearing, traffic, as anyone who drives down 23 knows, is increasing. And that's not to say that Cincinnati and Cleveland haven't experienced their own seismic shifts. Today on All Sides, we're talking the three C's, comparing and contrasting, and maybe even a little friendly competition about our major metropolitan areas. Joining us from the southwestern part of the state is Liz Bloom, principal with Bloom Community Partners consulting firm in Cincinnati. Welcome to All Sides, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
Here in studio is Jason Reese, Assistant Professor of City and Regional Planning at the Knowlton School of Architecture at The Ohio State University. Welcome back, Jason.
Thank you.
And from the northeastern corner of the state is Joyce Wong, Director of City Planning Commission for the City of Cleveland. Welcome.
Thank you and good morning.
Liz, half of Cincinnati's metro area is in Kentucky. If there is a competition amongst the three C's, I'd like to start with whether sharing your downtown area with another state gives you an advantage or a disadvantage, because you're the only one. You're actually a tri-state area because you touch Indiana.
We are. We have 15 counties and three states in the metro. That's a good question. I think that the positive way to look at our Northern Kentucky neighbors and the urban parts of Northern Kentucky, which is really Covington and Newport, is that it gives us access to two state funding sources, Kentucky and Ohio, which I think is an advantage. I think that it makes decision-making much more complicated. We have been talking for what feels like generations about the Brent Spence Bridge,
which is the
enlargement of the bridge between Ohio and Kentucky. And that has been quite a journey. I think certainly made more complicated by the fact that two states are engaged, but also bringing, you know, potentially more state money to the table. So I think it is, like everything, I think it has its pros and cons.
Continuing with the sort of setting of the geographic features of our cities, Jason, Central Ohio is kind of, I mean, we're square in the middle of the state, but one would argue we're about 2 hours from every part of the state. So positive, negatives, I mean, we don't have a waterfront like Cincinnati and Cleveland.
Yeah, that's true. But what Columbus has been able to do is grow. I mean, we have plenty of space. And, you know, you can't forget the city's very active annexation policy that stretched out through the latter half of the 20th century. And, you know, so when you think about the population, particularly in the city of Columbus, recognize that that ability to annex as we grew was really critical.
We also have the state capitol, and yes, we have Ohio State University, which we'll talk about more in a little bit. Joyce, when it comes to the city of Cleveland, you do have that lovely long waterfront with Lake Erie, huge shipping terminal for the United States. What about your geography helps you? What about it maybe hurts you?
Great question. So, well, we pride ourselves on being a green city and a blue lake. You know, we are on 25% of the world's fresh water with the Great Lakes there. So we find that to be such a joy. And we are working towards making ourselves, you know, embrace the lake as more of a front yard than a backyard. I will say that because of our positioning on the Great Lakes and because of our river channel, we do have, you know, $1 billion of industry coming through that shipping channel, which is a federal shipping channel. But otherwise, you know, we are, you know, spatially in a great position, but we are dealing with a lot of historic legacy, you know, policies that have kind of contributed to post-industrial decline that we're really facing. So, I think we were really trying to embrace our assets and natural resources.
Yeah, I've even the conversation about whether to relocate the Brown Stadium, which is a whole other conversation. Part of that was about reclaiming more of that waterfront area, converting it into potentially, if they moved, one of the selling ideas was you could convert that into like a downtown destination space with waterfront access.
Certainly. And, jumping right into the Browns, ultimately
okay.
The Browns has a history on the lakefront, so they have had a footprint almost 100 years. So we still believe that they have a space, but certainly with that ongoing decision, we are ready to think about it in two different ways. We certainly hope they stay, but there is an opportunity also to really see the downtown be reconnected to our lakefront and many
yeah.
more.
I'll say, having been to Cincinnati, Liz, you guys have a beautiful lakefront area. You have the Reds down there. I mean, you do have gorgeous stadiums on the water.
I think that the redevelopment of the banks, I was thinking, as Joyce was talking about sort of reclaiming the lakefront, I think we did the same thing. We reclaimed our riverfront. We buried a whole highway system. We've been moving industrial users off the riverfront, but the Bengals and the Reds have been a big part of redeveloping the riverfront. And it really feels to me like the banks we've invested a ton of public and private money in the green space and the public space between the two stadiums and now beyond them in both directions. And that's been a huge gift to the city that we've been willing to hold that much real estate in public hands and do the kind of investment that we've done has made a huge difference in downtown. I think in some ways it was the precursor to the kind of office to residential conversion that's been happening downtown now. We've done a lot of Class B and C office conversion to residential. And I think partly it's because the riverfront is a pretty attractive front door for people who live downtown now.
Yeah, we don't have a big riverfront here in Columbus, but there has been a lot of reclamation of the Scioto Riverfront. We've gone from industrial along that river to there's a gorgeous running path there, a lot of the museums and some of the places that have anchored around it.
Yes, absolutely. Just the removal of some of the dams on the Scioto River in particular has added an extensive amount of park space downtown. And you really do see that as a pretty important amenity as we're talking about some plans for downtown and where we're seeing growth happen.
So it seems like no matter the city, we all gravitate to the waterfront.
Yes.
I think that's probably so true. You know, Jason, one of the interesting things, I've heard Columbus described as a post-industrial city, and that perhaps this is why we are booming in this moment. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it really speaks to the fact that we've always had a very diverse economy and have not been as sensitive to kind of one shift in an economic sector versus another. While we had industry here, and we still have some industry here, it really wasn't comparable to what we would see in Northeast Ohio or in Southwest Ohio, for that matter. And you have to think about the role of the state government being here. And also, as you mentioned, Ohio State, as well as our collection of other smaller universities, Columbus State Community College, all of that has proven to be really powerful in terms of supporting a pretty robust economy.
The irony, though, is that Columbus is also called a car-centric city for the way it developed alongside the automobile. I do think, and Liz, Joyce, I would love to get your opinion on this, that Cleveland and Cincinnati seem to have a more downtown feel to them than Columbus does. It feels like there's more walkability there.
Well, I can jump in. This is Joyce from Cleveland. And, certainly there's a lot of shared, kind of development pattern with Cincinnati. But because we were growing, primarily pre-automobile, we have really good bones. So a lot of our street networks are close together. They're walkable. In fact, Smart Growth America ranked Cleveland as one of the most walkable and affordable cities in America. And because we have that walking ability, we can really build off of that. And not to mention, we also have a very developed public transit system. So our heavy rail It's actually the 14th most ridden public transit system in the country, which is actually punching above our weight for our population. So because of that, we're really trying to embrace that walkability and trying to plan around transportation and making sure that we are getting people out there in many different modes.
Yeah, I think I could talk similarly about Cincinnati. I mean, our growth periods, our big growth periods were similar. I mean, and I think there's because of Cincinnati's hillsides also, I think we were built really densely in the basin, which is what we call sort of this the on the same level with the riverfront communities over the Rhine West End. And then up the hills was a big deal. We had inclines that created our first suburb cities, which were, built in the 1890s. All of those places were pretty dense, and so that makes them still fairly walkable. I unfortunately, unlike Cleveland, we pretty much dismantled our public transportation system that was built on the inclines and the streetcars. But we're putting it back together. I mean, I think we're doing things now to really forward our public transportation system. We've done some zoning updates, controversial, but I think really productive, that are encouraging increased housing construction around business districts and transit corridors. So I think we're working back. We're leaning back into our roots and our good bones in some pretty productive ways, but it'll take a while.
Yeah, Columbus is definitely the sprawling of the city. And I mean, speaking of controversial zoning, we are in the thick of it right now. We're going to be voting on Link Us. We will be doing a show on Link Us later as we get closer to the election. But we're talking about those things, density, public
Absolutely.
transportation. We're kind of behind the curve here.
And I think it's good to think back to Columbus's streetcar system, which really
Which
was
also no longer
no
exists.
longer exists, and like other streetcar systems around the country, was dismantled. Our regional transit agency, COTA, as far as I know, serves one of the least dense service areas in the country, which makes that service really challenging from an economic and a logistical perspective. But Link Us does provide an opportunity with our zoning revision to actually bring some of that density back to those corridors. I think of Columbus as very much being on several different axes, with High Street and Broad Street being critical there. And so it's really about bringing back those corridors to what they once were.
Yeah, the mayor's also proposed turning that, like, I think it's like a 2 mile loop around the
Yes.
downtown core into a walkable area.
Yes, which I think will certainly help connect many of those parts of downtown that are relatively disconnected right now as a pedestrian.
We also want to hear from you this hour. Have you lived in two? Maybe you've lived in all three of the big C's and you have an opinion on them. You can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email your comments to allsides@wosu.org. Jason, I used to live in Denver before I moved back to Ohio, as someone sometimes does. And Columbus reminds me of Denver in a lot of ways. We obviously don't have the mountains. Although I will say the mountains are like an hour away from Denver. They are not the city in the mountains. They are the city near the mountains. But they had explosive growth. They have radiating size of their city. They have a push to the suburbs and all these pains that come along with so many people moving to a location so fast. I mean, Delaware County is the fastest growing county in the state.
Yes.
In the last census, it grew by 22%,
Yeah.
and the population is expected to double by 2050.
And, I think we're going to feel that as a pinch point going forward. We're trying to balance this growth with a variety of community needs, impacts on quality of life. So while Columbus, as I agree with you, it certainly would fit that model, in particularly a lot of growth in the last 2 decades. Our metro area has grown over 20% in the last 2 decades. If you took the Columbus metro area out of Ohio's state population, the state would have actually shrank in the first part of the 21st century.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation on the three C's: Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati, right here on 89.7 NPR News.
the candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Hello, life. Goodbye, Columbus. I got a feeling that you're gonna hear from us. You're gonna know that we've taken the world by surprise. Got that look in our eyes.
That was the Association singing the title song to the movie Goodbye, Columbus. And you're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. The City of Champions, the Arch City, and the Queen City are better known as Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. They're Ohio's major cities, and we're comparing and contrasting them this hour and maybe having a little friendly competition. Still with us is Liz Bloom, principal with Bloom Community Partners Consulting Firm in Cincinnati, Jason Rees, who is a professor of city and regional planning at The Ohio State University, and Joyce Wong, Director of City Planning Commission for the City of Cleveland. I want to talk about affordable housing because this is an issue that touches all of our cities. I'll start with you, Jason. The price of a home in Columbus has, for lack of a better word, it's gone bananas in the last decade. Since the Great Recession, home prices are inching towards a median of almost $400,000. How did we get here?
Yeah, underbuilding. We've been underbuilding probably since the recession. And you have to factor in, you know, during the recession itself, we lost a lot of homes in the heart of the city to foreclosure, later to vacancy, and a lot of those have been demolished. I think we've probably been building about half of what we need to build on an annual basis just to keep up with our growth. And you're seeing that in our market. The tensions that folks are dealing with in terms of, you know, just trying to find, particularly for homeowners, trying to find homes that are available and where there's not just a massive amount of competition for those units.
It's also, I think, sometimes about the kind of units we're building. Particularly in the suburbs, we're building larger, like 2,000 square foot plus single family homes that are starting in the low 400s.
Yes.
We're not building a lot of starter houses.
No. And that's a national trend. And it does create a challenge, particularly for first-time home buyers. Or for the fact that we recognize that, you know, we have smaller households now. We have an aging population that may have different housing needs in the future. Maintaining that large of a space is going to be really challenging. And so that's certainly an area where we need more production.
Liz, Cincinnati is also experiencing some record high home prices. You are, I think, 50-ish thousand units behind where you want to be. How is the city grappling with that?
So city and the county and the region, really. I mean, I think the nuance I would add, I think our story is very similar to Columbus's. We, too, have not been doing the production that we need to do. I think the ad for Cincinnati is that we have always historically been a renter market. We have the majority of our households are renters, and the rent increases have been also astronomical. And it's the same. We have this very mismatched housing market. We have lots of big single family suburban homes in the city and elsewhere, and a population which is increasingly getting smaller household sizes, is aging. I think one of the forward moves is, at least in Cincinnati, the zoning modifications called Connected Communities in Cincinnati, which encouraged what we are calling middle housing. I think everyone is calling it middle housing, sort of mid-density housing, again, in adjacent to business districts and along transit corridors. We have a lot of that housing. Because we have historic housing, we had a lot of that kind of stock. But reinvesting in existing housing stock is also, I think, a key part of what's going to get us out of this. But, I mean, it's definitely a production issue for us as well.
Joyce, what is it like up in Cleveland? Because particularly, like what Liz says, when it comes to the preservation of historic housing stock, that is an area, I think, where Cleveland has struggled a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great question and good point. And I, first of all, As the city planning director, I am just so excited that zoning has become top of mind for so many of our cities. It's a very technical, sometimes dry, but it's so important because it kind of really tells you what the development patterns should look like. And, you know, Cleveland also has addressed some of our zoning challenges to encourage both form of how things are built, but also to increase like slight density to encourage that middle housing, as you referred to, Liz. But Cleveland is quite interesting in that, you know, the majority of our housing stock is at least 100 years old. And what that means is some housing stock has lasted and they've been invested in. They're bankable. They're in areas that have seen turnover and investment in those properties. But like many American cities, we have homes that are in swaths of what we call redlined areas, where there was, you know, kind of wholesale federal and banking policies that restricted the ability for people to get loans. And so what you saw was just this wholesale disinvestment in a lot of these historic homes, many of whom, you know, were taken down during the foreclosure crisis, and many of whom that are still existing have issues like lead paint. And so even though our population is, you know, still declining, people will say, well, we have a lot of housing stock. It's true, we have housing stock, but we need quality housing stock. Mm. And therefore we actually need production because we need to produce new units to make up for all of the units we've lost since 2008, as well as the periods in which there was almost no building happening. And we need a mix of different types of housing, very similar to what Cincinnati and Columbus need too.
Yeah. You know, I'll just add, and I don't know where Cleveland and Columbus are in the tax reappraisal process, but Cincinnati just went through a tax reappraisal process, mm-hmm. and it's made legacy homeowners' tax burden so much more significant, which is a whole nother issue for us. We're working hard to preserve homeowners, particularly legacy homeowners, Black homeowners, and it's just gotten doubly more difficult because of our tax appraisal process.
Yeah, there's a whole conversation at the legislature right now about property taxes and what can be done. It is complicated. I mean, it isn't a one-to-one, like the increase in your home value goes up 20%, your taxes go up 20%. But depending on your school district and your taxing districts and all these other like very complicated factors, you can get hit with a four-figure increase in a single year, which can essentially tax you out of your house.
That's exactly right. And that's what we're finding in a lot of cases. I think I would urge the legislator continue those conversations and diligence because it's getting to be a really urgent problem. And I imagine the more reappraisals take place, the more jurisdictions will follow ours.
You know, when we have a conversation about revitalization, we can talk about neighborhoods like Over the Rhine in Cincinnati or the Short North here in Columbus. Even Franklinton is starting to experience a bit of revitalization. But Jason, I want to ask you, and I'm going to ask everybody, how do you balance the growth of these neighborhoods against affordability? Because I feel like when we talk about revitalization, we're also talking about gentrification.
Yeah, it's really a bit of a juggling act, actually. You know, we are seeing certainly those housing pressures escalate in our urban core neighborhoods. Now, we've done some novel things here. If you think about the South Side of Columbus and the Healthy Families, Healthy Neighborhoods program that Children's Hospital runs, which they've put in a significant amount of affordable housing. They're now doing that in Linden. You know, the question is, will we keep up? And I think going back to the tax appraisal question, too, you know, what are we doing for our residents who have been there long term, you know, particularly our the older population who may be on a fixed income, where, yes, that 4-digit tax increase is going to be a real shock to their system and could drive them out of their house.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, Over the Rhine is a beautiful neighborhood, like kudos on the project. But, you know, as things, I mean, it is gentrified to a certain extent. I think that's fair to say.
It's gentrified to a significant extent. In the 2020 census, we went from majority Black to majority white in Over the Rhine. And Over the Rhine is a real story of urban reinvestment and revitalization, and it's been very positive, but it has displaced thousands of people. And I think there has to be a political will to keep up with production of affordable units in the same way that we're encouraging production of market rate units. And it takes money, period. There's not the math problem with producing a new unit of rental or ownership housing doesn't work. And it certainly doesn't work for low-income families. And that's where our real need is. So we've got to create the revenue streams to build affordable units in concert with our market rate units, which the private sector is doing. And it's a public decision-making process.
Joyce, how are you guys balancing this out? Because there are some beautiful, expensive parts of the Cleveland area.
Yeah, and then I would say I'll just preface by saying it's complicated in Cleveland. So I think one of the facts is that in Cleveland specifically, we sort of have a very dysfunctional relationship with our housing market. And there was an Urban Institute study that shared Cleveland is doing great when it comes to mission or philanthropic funding. We get a lot of federal funding, but we are 93rd out of 100 in private investment. And that's residential, that's family, that's commercial, small business. And so certainly there are some areas that are growing, and we have experienced the same levels and kind of growth in rents. And there are markets that are sort of now picking up, and you know, you can kind of find on the MLS and real estate forums like homes for sale. But you know, there are huge swaths. I think only one or two census tracts, three census tracts really only grew in population, but huge swaths where you know, we are seeing that continued disinvestment. And I think the affordability question is critical, because now that materials have increased, labor costs have increased, interest rates are still high, it is very hard to build. And when we do build, the city and the public sector still has to subsidize, right? We still have to subsidize even our market rate in order to get the projects to pencil, and let alone, you know, getting down to affordability, you know, we would really need a lot of support. We need a lot of capital investment, very similar to what Liz said, in order to actually produce an amount of affordable housing to really help. So it's a pickle that we're constantly trying to solve for.
And if you want to join our conversation this hour about the three C's, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513. We got an email from a Jacqueline who says she lived in a close suburb of Cleveland from 2011 to 2015 and felt very much a part of the city and the community and integrated into the local culture. She's now lived in New Albany for 5 years, and she feels too far from Columbus to feel a part of the community. It's too sprawling, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, we're going to see shifts, I think, generationally, in terms of what people desire in the housing market, what type of neighborhood context they're looking for. And I can certainly understand that, you know, if you're used to that, you know, more dense environment where, you know, a little more community cohesion, being in a suburb with very large lots where you're very disconnected, that's going to be a real jolt. And so, again, as we think about particularly if we're going to bring in younger folks that we need for our labor force and our economy, you know, are there the types of housing that they desire, and are we providing that for them?
Are we doing that downtown density?
Yes.
We're going to talk a little bit more about food later on, but I want to take a call from Steve in Upper Arlington. Welcome to All Sides, Steve.
Hi there. Yeah, I missed part of the program, so I'm not sure if you already covered this, but all three cities are famous for beer. And you got like a major beer history in Cincinnati, including a big Sam Adams plant, and then Cleveland with Great Lakes Brewery and all the craft breweries. And then in Columbus, we have BrewDog and a whole bunch of smaller craft things. And I just think it's kind of cool that they, you know, they each have some beer to offer.
Thanks, Steve. That is true. I mean, every city's got its own local brewers, it's their own following. I'm a big fan of Great Lakes, Joyous. So, I mean, they have a very cheeky one called Old Leg Humper, which is particularly tasty. So,
that's great. Yep, you got a love your lines. And the lines for the Christmas ale tap is just, yes, it's like a holiday. So.
Yeah. So I do think just across the state, there's really been an explosion as nationally the rise of craft beer. Ohio really stepped into that moment, not even just with the breweries, but with a lot of local hops producers.
Yes, absolutely. I actually had a student who did an honors thesis on microbreweries and the neighborhoods that they located in, what happened afterwards. And, you know, she found that they were really critical. And you think about Franklinton and particularly East Franklinton, right? Those businesses have been really critical over there to the growth and to kind of the social life of those communities as well. So I think we're still a beer city, even considering our roots.
Yeah. The brewery district was pretty involved in prohibition.
Yes.
So the irony of the brewery district.
But yes.
Yeah.
All right. So I could not stay home if I don't jump in here and tell you that Cincinnati's history of beer is 200 years old. We were built on beer. Literally, there are caves under most of over the Rhine where we stored beer during Prohibition, before Prohibition. So just a couple of little known facts. We make more Sam Adams beer in Cincinnati than they do in Boston. They don't want you to know that, but we do. We've got some major, Rheingeist is a major producer, and we've got lots and lots of beer matters in Cincinnati. People care very much about what they drink.
That's interesting. I'll just comment from Cleveland. You mentioned Great Lakes, and Great Lakes Brewing is part of our kind of market district, which is near our West Side Market. And I know each of our cities has really amazing historic markets, which are, you know, foundations to some of our neighborhoods. But so many small businesses, you know, were built around the West Side Market based on beer. And a lot of that was actually drawing people to come to those areas and then kind of supporting economic development. So we're also excited to welcome what will be the first Black-owned brewery on the east side of Cleveland coming soon in the Midtown and Huff neighborhood. So we're excited to see that.
What's the name of the brewery, or do we know what it is yet?
Black Frog. Brewery.
Ooh, Black Frog. I like that name.
All right, and if you're looking for a Black brewery in Cincinnati, stop by Esoteric in Walnut Hills. Breweries actually have become as important at third places in Cincinnati neighborhoods as coffee shops. So every neighborhood has their own local brew, just not the city. Neighborhoods have their own local brews.
Oh. We're talking this hour about the three C's, Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. We're going to take a short break, and then our conversation will continue right here on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me. I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati WKRP.
You are listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, not WKRP. I am your host, Anna Staver. That was the opening to another sitcom set in Ohio, specifically Cincinnati. And the reason you're hearing it is because we're talking about the three C's today: Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. Comparing, contrasting, and maybe enjoying a little friendly competition over Ohio's three largest cities. Still with us is Liz Bloom, principal of Bloom Community Partners Consulting Firm in Cincinnati. Jason Reese, a professor of city and regional planning at Ohio State University, and Joyce Wong, director of City Planning Commission for the City of Cleveland. So I want to talk about the cyclical nature of population and the way it ebbs and flows in cities. Joyce, Cleveland used to be the fourth largest city in the United States. Now, Columbus is far and away the largest city here in Ohio. It's fascinating to me to watch how cities grow and fade over time.
So this is a really important question for the city of Cleveland. You know, we have declined over time. Our peak population was around 1950, close to a million people. And now we are at about 370,000. So about 37% of the number of people who are left, which is, you know, great decline. It's a huge strain on our ability to provide services and provide investments, capital investments into our city. And so, you know, ultimately we have to wrestle with that question. We're about to embark on a citywide planning process, thinking about Cleveland in 2040. And that essential question of, do we grow, do we work towards growth, or do we continue managing decline is going to be kind of the forefront of that overall planning process. But I think, you know, one thing that I kind of want to focus on too is, you know, it's so American in some ways that, you know, we grew, and then once we grew and we kind of like created all of this industrial land and created these what we call brownfields, right? Like there's dirty land. It's, you know, not buildable anymore, right? And you know, so we've kind of sprawled out beyond our urban core. And in that case, it's like so American because we're like, we want new, we want fresh, we want green, you know, we want to build these huge factories like sprawled far away from the urban core, that, you know, I think that we need to begin to reverse that. And I think people want a different quality of life too, that is a little bit more urban and dense. So we need to think about different scenarios. Like if we do become a climate haven in the future, the state of Ohio, city of Cleveland, we recently were featured on the cover of National Geographic as, you know, climate haven city. What does it mean? What does it mean for us to grow again? And can we be ready should that scenario happen?
Yeah, you look at it. So, oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's it.
I was going to say, you look at a city like Phoenix, which has been growing like crazy. But I mean, they're increasingly having triple digit days. They're having days reach 115, 120 degrees. And I think to myself, oh my goodness, I would not want to live in a place that got that hot for that long. But Liz, Cincinnati is growing. It's not growing by a lot, but it is growing.
Cincinnati is growing. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think about when I think about these three metros is what it meant to be Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus was all about the center city for a very long time. And it's not true anymore. It's about a metro. Like I said, we have a 15 county region in three states. And I think envisioning what the metro looks like and then what the role of the center city in it is, is I think what we're thinking about. And the city of Cincinnati has grown, as has Hamilton County, our core county, but the suburbs are still growing as well. I think the Cincinnati metro area maybe is the largest of the three of us at this point, but we have a small center city. And so it really is about how do you think about the center city as part of this larger region. And I think that's a challenge because, I mean, one of the things that is challenging for Cincinnati as a metro with so many pieces and parts is all those pieces and parts still have political agendas of their own. And I think that, while I say it might be lovely to think about this as a metropolitan area with an important urban center, which it is, the political agendas of 49 jurisdiction and 180, 128 in the 15 county region makes life complicated.
Oh, I imagine. I mean, we even have that here in Franklin County. Not as many, but I mean, there are these little cities surrounded by Columbus.
Yeah, we're, you know, as a state, very fragmented in our local government. We love local government here, and we have lots of them. But as Liz notes, it makes it really challenging to work on these larger scale issues, because you do have to have alignment of all those political interests.
Right.
Yeah, and Columbus is really on the fast growth here. I mean, we're driving a lot of growth in the state.
Yes, correct. You know, and I do think something to consider in all of this as well is that, you know, that outward push is happening everywhere in the state. And we have to think also from, as a state perspective, our farmland, which is critical to our economy.
Oh, it's rapidly disappearing in Delaware County.
Yes. And then also thinking about as a climate haven, you know, one of the things that we will hopefully have in the future is lots of fresh water when other parts of the U.S. may be struggling. But we have to make sure that, you know, we're doing the things we need to do environmentally so that we maintain that asset that's going to be critical to the future.
You know, when we talk about that sprawl and like this sort of regional area, I mean, when you look at Intel and Honda and some of and Nationwide and some of the big names right in and around Columbus, it is they aren't like Intel is not in the city. It's not in Franklin County.
No. Yeah. And we see that same as Joyce was noting. You know, we talk about not just urban sprawl, but job sprawl. Right. And we see it also with a lot of our logistics employment that we have here. And that creates challenges, particularly for those workers often who are in the heart of the city or maybe even just other parts of Franklin County to have to reach these jobs that can be pretty far out.
Yeah, which is a great way to talk about transportation and how we meet the transportation need of all of our residents. Not only that, but all the people who commute in, because a lot of people commute into these cities. So I'm going to ask the like billion-dollar question. Do you think Ohio would benefit from an Amtrak, from a train line connecting the three C's? And whoever wants to take it first is more than welcome to jump in.
Yes. I mean, I will say Cleveland has an Amtrak line that comes through, and we are very vocal. We're advocating for more, like we want expansion to happen. And right now our train lines come in at like 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. But ultimately, I think if we're able to connect Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus and Dayton, we call it 3C plus D, like we will be able to, A, be more sustainable because having tons of cars out, our air quality and emissions issues, you know, we need to have to drive towards more sustainable options. So we're a huge advocate. We love the idea. Want to keep it.
Agreed. On board. I'd like to have the three C's connected D, and we're very interested in Indianapolis and Chicago and Louisville, Lexington. So, you know, it's a bigger network. And I think that inner city connections would make a big difference in the Midwest.
Yeah, we really missed an opportunity here when there was a fledgling effort to get the three C's connected back in, say, 2012. You know, in thinking about comparing today to back then, you know, there were concerns raised back then. Well, what do you do when you get off at the train station? Where do you go without a vehicle, you know, with public transit being the way it was? But I would say, you know, just through micromobility with scooters, with rideshare, with improvements to public transit, that's not really the challenge that it was 10 or 12 years ago when this was last talked about.
Yeah, that makes a good point. I'm biased. I grew up in what essentially amounts to a suburb of New York City. So my dad rode Metro North every morning. It is a great way to go into a city.
Absolutely.
It's also a great way to commute.
Yes.
I mean, it's so much nicer to like read a book on a train than be stuck in traffic.
Absolutely. And for those of us who, you know, probably work too much, you know, having things like Wi-Fi on the train, just thinking about the mobility we would have, being able to access other labor markets and job markets.
I personally, if there was a train down from Delaware to Ohio State, I would take it every morning. It would be nice. If anybody would like to build me a commuter rail, I would appreciate it. But that does get to just a change in the way that people would access, like, not only the other cities, but just, like, access points around those cities.
Yeah, I'll comment from
Cleveland
that, you know, our Amtrak station actually currently is on our lakefront. And one of our big moves right now, big infrastructure projects that we're really aiming for is creating a multimodal station that incorporates our Amtrak station with our local public transit rail lines with a land bridge that connects downtown and our convention center to our lakefront. So you know, you could take a train from Cincinnati and land right at Lake Erie. That would be amazing.
That would be cool, would actually.
Be. Yeah. I was just going to jump in and say, we've built the first piece of a new streetcar system in Cincinnati from the riverfront up to essentially Findlay Market through downtown and over the Rhine. And it's been great. It's a small system. I think we're having semi-serious conversations about what it would mean to get up to University of Cincinnati and to some other job locations down to Boone County Airport, which is our big suburban job growth center. And I am always encouraged when we start those semi. I wish we would get serious about those conversations, because we've got some evidence that shows that transit does build economic market for redevelopment. And I think, you know, we would benefit from extending those lines.
Yeah, a train to the airport would be really nice.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've got one of those. So we got to get our folks to use it more.
Yeah. Well, you've got the biggest airport in the state, most international flights up in Cleveland. Like, I do feel, Jason, like our airport is small for the size of city that we are.
Yeah, I would agree. I see you see a bit of a tension where we're kind of trapped between several very large airports, and you have to factor in Chicago and Detroit from that perspective as well. I tried to expand those routes, and we've had some modest expansion. There is a new terminal planned, and we'll see if that will increase access for us. But certainly, it has not kept pace with the growth of the city.
As we're getting to the end of the hour, I want to ask a little bit of a fun question, because food is where cities love to compete. You know, you always hear governors making bets on football and whatnot and what piece of food they're going to offer. And I want to talk about more than whether Grater's is better than Jenny's, which it is. But
thank you. You're right. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. We have the Cincinnati agreement on this one.
No, I said Grater's is better than Jenny's.
Ah. But food really is part of our culture, right? It's part of community. They create these third spaces. So I wonder, you know, what do you guys each make? And I'll start with you, Liz. What do you make of the food scene in Cincinnati?
Well, I'm just going to go out on the competitive edge and say that I think we've got a lot more longstanding local food traditions in Cincinnati than Columbus and maybe Cleveland. So I would welcome you all to Cincinnati to try Grater's, try Skyline. But I would also tell you that beyond those two stalwart longtime favorites, there's a really pretty exciting food scene in Cincinnati, lots of new local restaurants, lots of really talented chefs. So come down for blank.
I think, you know, here in Columbus, I've been, you know, it's amazing to think about our growing international population and what that's done to our culinary environment in terms of just international cuisine that we have now, and much more so than we had 10 or 20 years ago. So I think that's it's kind of a new food scene here in Columbus, but I think that international diversity has also made an imprint on our restaurants.
Yeah, we have a large Indian population where I live up in Delaware, and they just opened an amazing Indian restaurant in downtown Delaware. 10 out of 10 recommend. We've gone entirely too many times since it opened. But yeah, it's those communities are really bringing some amazing cuisine with them.
Absolutely.
What about you, Joyce? What's great over there in Cleveland? Like, what should I get when I go visit?
Well, you know, there's a lot of kind of mom and pop type, you know, spots that serve the Polish boy, which is Cleveland food. But I do think that there's a kind of tons of local restaurants, barbecue, a lot of international owned cuisines. And, you know, there's some like really cool Instagrammable spots as well that are great for Gen Z's posting on social media, where, you know, you've kind of got a variety of different, and my husband and I were Taiwanese American, and we say, you know, we have at least one good Asian cuisine. And so we're like really happy about that. One Asian ethnicity cuisine, so we're good. We're still looking for our a good Chinese barbecue pork spot.
Oh.
So we don't quite have that yet.
Well, if you find one, let me know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a food is such a, you know, you think sometimes about like Midwestern food being bland, or it gets that like jokey conversation about casseroles and everything sort of filled with potato. But there is some amazing like local places everywhere. Like having grown up in New York, there are some great bagel places. Hmm. And I don't say that lightly.
Yes, as a New Yorker, that's quite a statement.
Katzinger's in
yes,
German
definitely.
Village, they do a really good job.
Absolutely, yeah. Long-standing neighborhood institution.
I think that there are restaurateurs who are really embracing the Midwestern thing. So James Beard nominee for Cordelia in Cleveland, which I highly recommend, come hungry. But they've really done a twist on kind of Midwestern style stuff.
That was Joyce Bond.
I'm just happy that you use. I'm just happy that you use food instead of football. So thank you for that.
That was Liz Bloom from Bloom Community Partners Consulting Firm in Cincinnati. Thank you for your time this morning.